We started in a new study here since we've began meeting again in this fall time on the life of David, and it's been good for me in reading about the life of David. And just want to, as a reminder, last week, if you'll remember, we talked about really the heart behind David, and we looked at Psalm 27 in verse 4, where David says, "One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple." And then verse 8, "When thou saidest, seek my face, my heart said unto thee, thy face, Lord, will I seek." And I've been thinking, I don't know if any of you have been like meeting in this barn for a long time, and if you remember Justin Tiller and back in that day and that song we used to sing in here, "One Thing Have I Desired, Lord." And it was never my favorite song, just the musical part of it, but it's been stuck in my head all week. And maybe a few of you will remember that. But and David's one thing was desiring God. And we're going to hear from Matt Mastrione tonight, and I just think it's appropriate for him to share what he's going to share tonight. He does not desire to be in front of people, and but that is what made David, as one of the things that made David who he was, is his life was behind the scenes. He was awesome. And the way when we meet him in the Bible, he's a shepherd. All his family's gathered together for this big meeting with is it Samuel? Yeah, with Samuel. And David's not even there. He's behind the scenes doing what's right and serving. And so let's I'm going to just pray quick, and we'll let Matt open the Bible and share with us about David. So, Lord, thank you again for tonight, and just the folks that are here, and you care so much about each of them, and you are the good shepherd, and we are your sheep, and we're so grateful that we're in your fold and that we can follow you and that you care so much about us. And help us to be about your business, about shepherding others and caring for other sheep. And I just pray that you teach us from David's life tonight. Give us a heart to serve and a heart to work, and that we would glorify you behind the scenes where maybe only you can see. And God, we love you, and we want you to be our only passion and our one thing. And just pray that you'd speak through Matt tonight and just use him. And it's your word that has the power. It's not any of us. And so just may your word penetrate our hearts and change us tonight. We love you. In Jesus' name, amen.
So, kind of as Joel mentioned, we've been on a study about David, and kind of following the progression, I guess, the beginning of David, it's just kind of, we'll cover a little bit about David's background, and then a little bit about what he was doing when we first see him show up. But kind of start off, how many people have ever seen Brain Games on TV? You ever watch Brain Games? It's a whole show. I love it. It's one of my favorite shows. It's a whole show about how perspective and things and how your mind works and playing with how you see things and things that you think are there that aren't really there. And a lot of what we're talking about tonight has to do with perspective, how you see things in a certain way. So I kind of put together some of my... I have a bunch of these. I think these are really cool. They're just interesting how your mind looks at something. It's actually a perfect square in the middle of a bunch of perfect circles. But the way your mind sees it, it actually looks like the square is kind of concaving on the edges. But it's a perfect square. The lines are all perfectly horizontal. But the way the colors, your brain kind of makes it look like everything's all leaning and shifting, and it's actually not. This one, it's a perfect square, bunch of perfect squares, but yet it feels completely warped and like there's waves going on. There's nothing moving in this image, but yet as you move your eyes around it, it feels like things are actually moving, things are shifting, and yet it's just static colors. Same thing with this one. It's kind of as you move your eyes around it, it just feels like in your peripheral something just moved out of the way, and yet there's nothing happening. It's just all perspective. And this one drove me nuts. I had to actually compare and figure this out. You have a square with an A and a square with a B. And square A is the exact same color as square B. I didn't believe it. I had to actually open it up in Paint and chop the image up and put the two pictures side by side just to confirm. And they are the exact same color. They're just playing with the shadowing and things, which makes your mind think that, hey, it's under a shadow, so this one must be darker, this one's... And so your mind puts these things together that aren't actually true.
Blue dress, gold dress.
No, this is... That one's interesting too, but this one's actually, like I said, I didn't believe that it was true until I actually pulled it up in Paint, chopped it up, and it is completely true. So a lot of it's just... It's easy to see things a certain way. We see things based on our experience, society, kind of what's the norm around us, what we think is possible. It's our perspective. But God has a different perspective. He sees things clearly. Things don't move and don't shift. He's not tricked by the way our mind sees something. He sees things exactly the way they're supposed to be seen. God saw David in a way that nobody else saw him. David seemed like a simple person, and yet God saw a whole lot more in David than what everybody else saw. So we'll kind of start with David's background. We'll start off, he's from Bethlehem, which in Bible times, Bethlehem wasn't anything to do. It was kind of a farming type place, crops, animals, that type of thing. Not a whole lot of big names came out of there. We know that it has a lot more historical significance, but at the time, just kind of a normal, common place. Not a lot of cool people came out of Bethlehem. David was the youngest. He had seven brothers, and he was the smallest of all of them. In 1 Samuel 16:11, Samuel said unto Jesse, "Are here all thy children?" And he said, "There remaineth yet the youngest." So we know David was the youngest of everyone. Most likely meant that he was kind of the baby of the family. I'm the youngest, so I was the favorite because I was the best. But the youngest tends to be the one that mom likes to take care of and, you know, hold on to a lot longer kind of stuff. And there's a good chance that, you know, David may have been that one as well. Probably also expected to do the least. The brothers probably carried a lot and did all the cool stuff and had the responsibilities, and he's just kind of the one that got dumped on whatever was left. But probably not a lot of high expectations. When David killed Goliath, which is actually in the next coming up right after this, most people estimate he was around 14 to 16 years old. So when we first see him, he's probably in that age range. So he's not very old yet. He's still a young guy. One thing that I thought was interesting, I just always assumed he was small. And just small, and he was probably smaller than his brothers in comparison, but I always just pictured him throughout life being just this little scrawny guy. Maybe it's because I was hoping for the best because I'm little and scrawny, and maybe that helps me out. But if you actually look at passages, nothing says he was little or small. In fact, a lot of passages seem to indicate that he actually might have been pretty big and might have been tough. He wore, or at least put on, Saul's armor. He didn't say it was too big. He just said, "I don't know, I've never tried this type of armor before. I'd rather not." He carried Goliath's sword and used it in a couple battles. So he could handle himself. He had some strength to him. He knew God. In 1 Samuel 16:18, It said, "Then answered one of the servants and said, Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, that is cunning and playing, and a mighty valiant man, and a man of war, and prudent in matters, and a comely person, and the Lord is with him." So by his reputation, they knew that the Lord was with him. Well, if the Lord is with them, that means somehow he knew God. He knew of God. You figure he's not too far away from, you know, Joshua and Jericho and, you know, these amazing stories of how God did things. And so he would have heard of a lot of these things. And I almost wonder if he wasn't, you know, if it was me and I just heard about, you know, Jericho or something. You got this big bunch of sheep. You'd wonder, you know, maybe if I walk around him every day. And then on the last day, blow my trumpet, if all the sheep will just fall down dead or something. Just having seen and heard of those things, you'd wonder how much of more that would have been real for him to be that close in terms of time periods to what was happening. But he knew God, knew him well. He knew of creation, being a shepherd. He would have been out, you know, a lot and would have known, spent a lot of time admiring creation and the things that God did. He was a servant. The shepherd is kind of a basic servant's job. A lot of people hired servants to do that because there isn't a whole lot to it typically. He had to stay behind while everybody else got to go to the party. So he was the one that had to just be stuck back and not get to participate in things. From where he was, there was really no chance of him to be king. He had no shot at any kind of cool big thing. There really wasn't any reason that anybody should ever come look for him and what he was doing and where he was at. But God's perspective, in David, God saw a king. He saw a man after his own heart. So God could see a lot more than what we would have just seen on paper. And it kind of makes you think, what is our perspective on people? You know, if we look around, how do you see people? Do we judge people? Do we put them in, well, there's no way they're that or they're that? You know, one example, believe it or not, Donald Trump has a soul. And God probably even loves him. But, you know, a lot of people see him in a lot of different ways. And certainly he is a lost person, and he acts like a lost person. But, you know, there's a lot of Christian people that act, don't really have an excuse to act the way they act. At least he has an excuse. He's lost. Just how do we see people? Kind of as an exercise, on the back of your paper there's a bunch of lines. What I'd like everybody to do is write down the first 20 people that you can think of that are somehow you know, and they can't be in this room. So it could be coworkers, it could be family, it could be friends, it could be anybody just pops in your head of people that are kind of in your circle of influence. Donald Trump wouldn't be in my circle of influence, so I wouldn't put him. But anybody you happen to rub a shoulder with, you saw, somebody you saw at the gas station, just write as many people as you can. And I know for me, a lot of times I don't have a name, I have a description. So it's the lady next door, or the PTO mom, or the guy that's the pilot. Those are my descriptions of people. But I'll give you a minute or so. See if you can shoot for 20 names, as many as you can write down of people you know. Any context, saved, not saved, friends, family, anything. So hopefully you're able to come up with a handful. Anybody find it like they came up with more than 20 really easy? Like some people could just rattle off people's names. I can come up. I mean, it took me a little bit to get rolling when I did it, but then I could kind of, okay, this area of life, I started connecting things. But what's interesting is if you kind of look at that list, all the people and the people that you're just around you, all the things that could be going on in any one of their lives, the perspective that God may have for them, you know, how many of them does God want for them salvation? How many of those people are unsaved? How many of those people does God have an appointment for you to impact them some way? Whether it's just to talk to them, encourage them, maybe you're a part of that salvation. But God wants you to be a part of encouraging that person, helping that person through something that they're struggling. How many of them are hurting in some fashion? Maybe you know of things. Maybe there's like people you probably have no idea, but I'm sure there's a good set of that list that are struggling with something, they're hurting with something. Things that happen in people's lives that we may or may not know, but that's all there, and that's all in your list of those people. There's stuff like that in almost all of their lives. You know, we had done Upwards, and there was one, a mom and a little girl, and I never saw the dad. It's like, yeah, okay, some dads just never show up to anything. And then the mom was talking to the daughter at one point, saying something about dad's in the moon or whatever. And here we found out, okay, dad had died. It's like, oh, okay, well, that seemed a whole lot more sad. Like, you know, and they just, for her daughter, who was probably 6 or 7, that was how they would remember him, is look up at the moon. That's where dad is. We had spent some time, Autumn and I, with Leadership Tusk at the girls' group home, just kind of, and I didn't really know much about it, but the girls' group home is kind of a couple tiers above jail for kids. It's a little more freedom, but there's definitely a lot of restrictions. They're not there because they want to be there. It's court ordered. And there was two girls, and I can't give a lot of details, but the one, they had done this assignment where she had to write down, they had everybody else write things about her that they saw, and it was things like, you know, beautiful and strong and goofy and fun. And then the other page was things she wrote about herself, how she felt. And it's like you're reading through and just seeing all these hurtful things, you know, broken and heartbreak and hurt and suffering and suicide and all these things. It's just, she's, you know, barely into her teens, and these are the things that are in her head. These are the things she believed about herself. The other girl had, again, early teens, had been in jail 7 times at that point, and she was just saying how, I wish my mom had cared and put more restrictions on us. She let us do whatever we want. She said, and I have a brother who's younger who's making the same choices I made, and I know he's going to go through the exact same stuff. It's like, and you know, she didn't know how to cook. She didn't know how to sew. She didn't know, because she never had a family or a mom or anybody who ever did anything with her. Nobody ever helped her. And it just, your heart breaks for people. You just kind of go through life. You can skim. You don't see God's perspective of people. You don't spend the time to look into their lives and see what's going on. God sees the lost. He sees them in all their sin and still loves them anyway, no matter what. And I don't know. For me, I know I just keep going. I'm not a people person. I can connect with people, but I don't just naturally connect with people. I have to see past. I have to make an effort. But that's something that I need to know about myself. I need to make that effort to actually do that. And then how God sees you in his perspective, you know, and I know this helps me because I tend to look at myself as not capable, not things I can do. And I know that I'm able to do ministry, to do things, mostly because God said I am, not because I think of it. 2 Corinthians 3, 5, and 6, not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God, who also hath made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter killeth, the Spirit giveth life. He has made me an able minister. So is God not strong enough to allow me to connect with people or to be involved in people's lives? I don't want to be the one to tell God he can't do something. And God chooses the humble. In 1 Samuel 15:17, and Samuel said, when thou wast little in thine own sight, Wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel? So even when Samuel actually was humble is when God is the one who picked him and said, hey, I made you this when you were humble back in the day. God likes looking for people who aren't looking to be more. God doesn't look at the outward appearance. He looks at the heart. So he doesn't look at what we see, the outside things. 1 Samuel 16:17. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. He was talking about one of the brothers who was bigger and stronger and looked like a king. He said, I have refused him, for the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, the Lord looketh on the heart. And that's cool. It's also scary, because if he's looking at your heart, what's he going to see? What's he going to find in there? Psalm 119:11. For David, thy word have I hid in mine heart, that I might not sin against thee. So David put God's word in his heart. That's what was there. And, you know, what's in my heart? Okay, so what is he going to look at? He's looking past this countenance and stuff, which is great for me. But what's he going to see on the inside? And, you know, it's up to me as to what I put in there. So then David's work. David was a shepherd. Basically kept the sheep. Your job is to keep the sheep, feed them, keep them alive. Not a glorious job. He had time to think, focus on God and his word. And as I mentioned before, it was a servant's job. He did the job basically nobody else really cared to do. None of the other brothers were there doing it. They dumped that on David. He was obedient. It wasn't a great job, but he did it. He had to miss things. He didn't get to go with the family. They didn't know what was going on, but he was left behind. And I'm sure it wasn't the first time he was left behind when they went and did something. It's probably he didn't even have to ask. He just knew they were all going. I'm staying behind with the sheep. He was humble. He's a behind-the-scenes kind of guy, not in front of people. Nobody's going to praise him for his job. Nobody's going to know what he accomplished. For sheep, I think a good day ends the same way it started. You have all the sheep. They're all there. You know, everybody's happy. Not a whole lot happens. You know, the highlights of the day, well, you know, this sheep ate a rock, but I think he's feeling better. You know, this sheep kind of had diarrhea, but I think, you know, it's because he ate the, you know, those are the highlights typically of your day, most of the time. But he had lots of time to see God in nature, and, you know, there's Psalms all over the place that he talks about. Psalm 8 talks about seeing God and God in nature and just appreciating that. He fought. He fought for what was right. So when he did need to step up, he stepped up. He worked hard when he needed to. And what does that look like when you're a shepherd? 1 Samuel 17:34, and David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock, and I went out after him. And that's just crazy in my mind anyway. You know, I see a lion take a sheep. Sorry, Dad, we lost one today. I mean, that'd be my mentality. But I went out after him and smote him. So I went, hit it, took the lamb out of his mouth. And then when the lion rose up against me, I just went ahead, hit it again, killed him. Like, who does that? What kind of person is just willing to do that? And slew him. My servant slew both the lion and the bear. So not just the lion, the bear was there too. I went ahead and killed him too because he looked at me wrong. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing yet defile the armies of God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. So he had experience. When he needed to step up, he knew just how to step up. And he knew how to fight. And in John 10:11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. You know, Jesus talking about being a shepherd. But, you know, David was willing to give his life. He was willing to sacrifice himself. He lived up to expectations and what he needed to do. He had a good reputation. In 1 Samuel 16:18, then answered one of his servants and said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse. He's cunning and playing, mighty, valiant man, man of war, prudent in matters, comely person, the Lord is with him. So, you know, his reputation preceded him. And, you know, how we had kind of talked before, last week Joel had talked about, you know, what is the one thing you desire and what would your kids say? Would your kids say that's what you desire? Would my kids say that I am, the Lord is with me? Is that their one scenario they would plug me into? Not sure. So kind of to turn it back again, for me personally, you know, and for us, where are we working? Where are we involved? You know, for me, I'm a programmer and a Lauren Innovations. That's where I work. Those are the things I do. Stay-at-home moms, yes, you have a job too. You work probably more than the rest of us do on a lot of days. What is your focus while you're there? You know, for me, it's trying to make it through the day. It's trying to make sure we get things done. Today was a crazy, hectic day. Tons of problems, lots of things going on. You're just happy when you get through the day and you fixed your work. But is that, you know, the right perspective? Am I letting God use me to build me during that time? Is he training me for things? Am I seeing past all the miscellaneous things that just go wrong? You know, my boss previously was completely frustrating. He drove me nuts. He was very difficult. Our personalities conflicted. It was very difficult to see eye to eye. And then to find out his wife had cancer. And he had other problems, medical issues, where he had constant back pain, like severe back pain all the time, just never went away. And so, okay, you start to at least feel for him a little bit. Okay, he's going through significant stuff, and all I'm seeing is how he's treating me. And I don't see past that. God's perspective is much higher and different. He sees things different than we do. Where are we ministering? Where are we working? You know, for David, that was his job. For us, there's work, and then there's a chance to be involved in ministry. There's things, work that we can do here, whether it's through Good News Club, like we mentioned. There's even ways through family life. We're trying to look at ways we can involve more people, just even in simple things like setting up and tearing down things, encouragement teams. The prayer team, some of those things. There's lots of things. I have a list, and I'll probably set it in the back of, I'd love to get people to sign up just to help with some basic things. You know, showing up a little bit early to set up. There's not a whole lot that needs done, but it'd be nice to get a lot more people to help. Whether that's it, whether it's sports, being involved in your kids' teams, whether it's through Upwards or through something else, there's always opportunities to connect and be a part of our community. And then to kind of wrap, David, it seemed like he was just sitting and waiting. Like he was, that was his thing, was just, let's just wait. But while he was doing it, God was training him in what he was doing. He learned a lot of things, and a lot of things about leadership and fighting that ultimately helped him to be king. He understood God is our shepherd, God protects us. So God will protect us in the things we do. And why he was so brave, because he knew God's there, he'll take care of stuff. Psalm 35:1, plead my cause, O Lord, with them that strive with me, fight against them that fight against me. So he's asking God, hey, step up and fight with me, or fight for me. Help me get past that. Don't make that my battle. Skip a little bit. David was faithful with what was given him. He didn't get a whole lot, but he was faithful in it. Luke 16:10, he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. He that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. So God likes to prove us in small things, but ultimately can he'll give us more responsibility once we prove that. So just like we started, it's all about how you look at things, perspective, and where our position is, perspective, and the people around us. Like I usually do, I usually talk, I have nothing to say normally, and then when I have to teach, I usually have too much to say. So there's a little bit of time left. There should be some questions on the back of your sheet. With what time's left, you got about 15 minutes or so. Run through those questions at your table. And Nate will wrap us up a little before 8.